Hey kids, do you like wrestling? Well, we like wrestling too. We are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Myself and Chris Novembrino kind of doing a lazy river of wrestling criticism, going through the news and whatever happened in stateside television wrestling. And also, you know what? Sometimes we just like to watch old stuff and talk about that too. Love for you to give us a listen if you haven't already. We are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings, and I want to tell you all about my show, the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. On the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, we do a thorough analysis on the biggest issues and trends within the pro wrestling industry. We talk a lot about pro wrestling media, we talk a lot about fan culture and wrestling's place within general pop culture, and we talk about the broader influences that are shaping the way we discuss and analyze the pro wrestling industry. We've had some of the brightest minds in the pro wrestling intelligentsia on the show, including WrestleNomics host Brandon Thurston, both Rich Kreich and Joe Lanza from the Flagship Wrestling Podcast, Trevor Dame from the Through the Years podcast, and a whole lot more. This isn't a show for hot takes. It's not a show recapping the latest episode of television. This is a show focusing on the biggest topics in pro wrestling and doing a deep dive on the real stories behind the surface level analysis you might find elsewhere. The Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, and we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a try. Thanks.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello and welcome back to the Euro Clutch. I'm Ian Hamilton and joined by special guests in this episode. Welcome back to the Voices of Wrestling podcast feed, Neil David. Neil, how's it going?
Oh, yeah, it's going really well. I'm really excited to get the headphones back on. It feels like a long time since I've done any audio, and it's a long time since I've complained about British wrestling. So I've got some hot, spicy takes ready to go.
Yeah, it's. We've been a bit of a heat wave around these parts the last few days, so been kind of waiting to, you know, not add to the heat with extra expletives. But yeah, main thing we're going to be going on about on this episode is going to be the state of RevPro, because yeah, there's quite a bit of discontent coming across a certain part of the fan base, which is a little unfortunate, bearing in mind it's their, you know, self-proclaimed biggest summer ever, which we'll touch upon. But no, of course, last month we had the 30 under 30 list on Voice of Wrestling, and be remiss to not talk about, I know it's not pretty much old news, but you know, we're the only European wrestling podcast on there, so we do kind of need to address it. So yeah, we had the top 30, a bunch of honourable mentions, and yeah, Gabe Kidd coming out number one, Francesco Akira number 23, Callum Newman 29th, they're your only European inclusion, so you know, 10%, great. But you look at like the honourable mentions, and you look at like Mike DiVecchio, Axiom, Crowchester, which, you know, I have a pretty strong suspicion who put that vote in, because you know that's a name you have to be watching one promotion out of Berlin pretty much to be have him on your radar. Driller Maloney, Leon Slater, Luke Jacobs, Mariah May, now Blake Monroe, Oscar Loiber, Tommy Billington, Zaire, Danny Luna. It's like, well, yeah, that's a decent name, but it's like you'd think, you know, with the breadth of people on the voting panel, there's a lot of names in there who, you know, I'm surprised didn't even get onto the hey, they got a token vote thing. I guess, you know, full disclosure, I would have been part of the panel before stuff kicked off, brought some last episode, so didn't get around to submitting a list, and most of my names probably would have made that, you know, hey, they got a solitary vote kind of thing. But you know, just going through some of the names that, you know, would have been eligible, like you've got Leon Cage, who, granted, he's only just broken onto the scene, but you know, there's a name that, assuming his current injury doesn't, you know, screw him up too much, you'd be expecting to be a bit of a fixture on this list. Paige Tahani, you know, former WXW Unified Champion, okay, he's on the injury list. Depending how much longer he's on the shelf, may not be on next year's list, but surprised he wasn't on there. True and Lacey, I mean, surprised they were no junior tag league finalists this past year. Again, is that something where, you know, a lack of, I guess, consistent high-level UK appearances, has that had an impact? Want to go to, like, similar proxy, you know, CPF, Danny Black, Joe Lando. You know, they've started becoming a lot more regular in Rev Pro. Idle Blanc, heck, he was in the Champions Carnival earlier this year. Didn't, you know, get a vote. You know, you can go down, I'm just going to rattle off a bunch of names here, you know, JJ Gale, Ricky Knight Jr., Millie McKenzie, Man Like Dries, Nick Schreier, Aaliyah Bloom, Lawrence Roman, the two Lycoses, Rio, Kuro, Will Cruz. I mean, maybe next year, if that no run he's on at the moment goes well. But, you know, there's about a dozen or so names who really, I'm not saying would be even made for honourable mentions, but, you know, names who are getting, you know, some kind of traction or regular appearances across Europe. That, yeah, it's the kind of thing you'd think maybe next year if there's fresh eyeballs. But I don't know if you put a vote in, Neil, or if there's any names you would have at least stuck a vote in for.
Yeah, I think it's quite interesting, like you sort of alluded to it there, that when you look at the three that actually got in, they're the three that don't really work in Europe. You know, you've got Gabe Kidd, Francisco Akira, and Callum Newman are working in New Japan. And then when you look down the list, I think Leon Cage, yeah, I think he's one to look for next year. I've enjoyed some of his work in Rev Pro. I mean, Connor Mills, for me, is someone who I'm always going to have a bit of a soft spot for. But then you look at some of the booking for a lot of the people, like Ricky Knight Jr., for example. Who was the other one that I was thinking of? I mean, I suppose you could put Connor Mills in there as well. People like Kid Lykos. Like, these are kind of a bit on the treadmill kind of guys. So they're not people that are necessarily going to stand up and stand out in a way. I mean, Peter Tiani, injury and what have you. Leon Slater doesn't feel like he's on the tip of our tongue. I would probably have voted for Nino Bryan, and I didn't vote, by the way. I've had a, you know, I'm kind of same as you. It's just, it's where it takes so much work to do this, and I think it's so much work to put it all together and to even just make a list. So huge kudos to the guys and girls that did it. I would have voted for Nino Bryan, but I understand why people don't, because he's not a wrestler who you can look at coming to the ring and get excited about. But when you watch, he's someone you've got to really invest in and get that kind of momentum going. So I can kind of understand why he's not in there.
So yeah, so like, no, obviously, no, Nino Bryant not really originally booked for that particular spot. You know, I mean, a couple of names I was going to be looking for, Aaliyah Bloom, you know, probably come pretty high up on my list. Like, he's a guy, granted, mainly WXW, although he has done as a New Wave over in Wales. He did a run a couple of months back. But he's a guy who, you know, I don't say had like a white meat baby face kind of run, but, you know, at the start of the year, he had a big change of character and, you know, a lot more, I don't say extreme, like he's doing weaponry and what have you, but he's shown a completely different side to himself. So he's a lot more three-dimensional as a character. So maybe, you know, that, you know, carries on throughout 2025 into 2026. We'll see who go, you know, how that goes. You know, going on back, Leon Slater, like, he's, you know, with TNA thing is a feather to the bow, or a feather in the cap, so to speak. I do wonder just how much that is just, you know, window dressing, because in TNA, No, Garrett Kidney aside, I don't really see that many people talking about TNA. No. You know, it's that whole thing of, it's good, you know, like, you know, we've got, you know, Harley Hudson, we've got Myla Grace, you know, Zaya Brookside, you know, relocating, got a contract there. But it's like, you've got all the, you know, the British names in there, but as far as people actually talking about them, I barely see anything. And I'm not saying, oh, TNA is where people go to die and wait for an NXT contract, but it seems weird that the most time hearing about Leon's run in TNA with the Hardy Boys is when he's mentioned it in promos and on Twitter.
It felt like there was a lot of fanfare to the signing, and the cynic in me would suggest that maybe it was a bit of an advertisement more than an actual intention, because it doesn't really seem like it's the momentum has carried them through, really. Which is a bit of a shame, really, because it's, you know, Leon Slater was becoming a difference maker for our scene, and it would have been better to have him around a little bit more. Do you know, actually, the one that does surprise me the most, and I think I missed him off a second ago, was Mike D. I thought he would get much, much higher than he did. You know, I'm not a big All Japan guy. I watch the big matches, you know, like I watch the championship matches, but I watched his carnival matches, and I don't think there was anything that really stood out to me as being particularly amazing. But there's just something about a big meathead flying around, and like a big sort of chav bruising people, and then, you know, doing some mad flip over the rope, and he's just such a captivating person that I thought the buzz after the carnival would have been a bit more for him. But again, I might be cynical here, but he has just signed a contract with New York, I believe. So does that, is there still that old thing of people like us? Because it's a very work rate kind of list, isn't it? So as soon as someone gets that signed,
I mean, obviously, so Mike D and Nigel Blanc having their farewell match in WXW on, was it August 9th, August 10th, WXW Shortcut for Top. You know, they haven't said, you know, outright where they're going, but, you know, people are putting two and two together. With Mike D, the one thing which, you know, would have held me back from having him that high up on his list, and again, you know, if you look at the voting period, say, you know, it's a June this came out. So if you want to go June to June, he's only had 65 matches in this calendar year. You know, and you know, we can say, well, you know, he had, you know, ironically, 1st of June 2024, had Jeff Cobb for WXW. Then he had, you know, stuff for GWF, EWA in Vienna. Yes, that same promotion, Mercedes Moné, popped about nowhere and won a belt in. Be like, you're looking there, but then you go over to, you know, the run he had in the UK, or lack of. You know, was it about this time last year he popped up in Revolution Rumble, had a brief run, a brief feud with Ricky Knight Jr., and then never appeared in RevPro again. You know, Progress, he's got a match, I believe, at this coming month against Axel Tischer for the Atlas belt. A tables match, because why the fuck not? But, you know, now the fact that, you know,
because this Mike is awesome.
On his way out. Well, I mean, this is probably me speaking out of pocket. I do wonder if that was based on the GCW cage spots over WrestleMania weekend. Right. You know, the Gringo Loco, you know, sit-out powerbomb through a load of tables. But the one thing that really stood out to me, though, was the two All Japan runs. So, obviously, in November last year, he did the Real World Tag League. And pretty much straight away he came back, he pulled out of a bunch of dates, like you can see on his cage match. You know, last All Japan Real World Tag League show was December 8th, and then the next show was February 22nd. Now, he took time out because of an injury, fair enough. And he goes through, he's, you know, does a couple of WXW shows, then Superstar Wrestling Belgium, WXW again through 16 Karat Gold. After 16 Karat Gold, got four straight flip backwards. Then Champions Carnival, WrestleMania, Champions Carnival again. And again, coming back from the Champions Carnival in May, he's got an injury, directly strips him of that European belt. And, you know, pretty much, you know, when he has that farewell match in August, that'll have been his first WXW match in nearly 4 months. And, you know, granted, you know, we always say people his size shouldn't be flying around because, more prone to injury, but that's kind of it, I think, in terms of consistency. If you're going all out for the big Japan run, but then having to sit on the shelf recovering, unfortunately, that's a kind of style which is really going to shorten your career. And I would say there's whatever this contract is. No, it's come to the right time, if only because you're not going to get this whole, you know, I need to go all out and, you know, impress. You know, if you've got your bag, you know, you're not having to do that, but it does come with the downside of, as a fan, you're probably not going to see him as much. Unless, I mean, heck, even if this is, I know there has been talk of NXT Europe, but, you know, if that comes up, who knows what that's going to be? I mean, you know, one of the last episodes I did on this, I posited was literally going to be Evolve, a YouTube only show, which, you know, and we've both lived through NXT UK, you know, that did its fair bit of damage to the European scene. And that was on, you know, BT Sport, that was on the WWE Network. That didn't do too much for those names. You know, that was, we said for a time, it was a front for WWE to get the names they wanted. You know, they got their Pete Dunne, they got their Walter, they got their Tyler Bate. Okay, they fucked two-thirds of those guys up. But, you know, that was effectively, in hindsight, a front for getting the names they wanted about being seen to cherry pick. I doubt an NXT UK would be any different. That's an NXT UK would be any different, but, you know, we'll see. But going back to that final 30 under 30 list, the other thing I thought was telling, like, out of the 30 names, only two of them were independent guys. Mad Dog Connolly and Adam Priest. The rest of them were either, you know, big American promotion or Japanese promotion. It's like, that kind of speaks to the issue of, you know, well, guess what, we just spoke with Mike D. If you've got the, you know, the proverbial bag as a contract, you're not constantly having to go out and, you know, go balls to the wall to get the next big booking. Okay, the inverse may be that if you have that, you can take your foot off the gas, and we've seen that a few times. But, you know, definitely when it comes to you know, whatever's next for both Aigle Blanc and Mike D, you know, it'll be good for both the bodies, but at the same point, if you're the kind who, you know, puts these lists together, you know, looking for, like, match of the year stuff and what have you, I don't think you can be getting those, you know, with any kind of regularity, especially if, you know, as we suspect, NXT Europe's going to be an evolve, you know, two match, you know, 10 minutes, you know, a week card with, you know, various segments. I mean, hope I'm proven wrong, but yeah, to me, it just doesn't feel like it's going to be, it's not going to get that much in the way of fresh eyeballs, let's put it like that, especially not the level where, you know, when back in the day you were working every weekend for your progress as UF pros or, you know, big name European promotions of the day.
We just don't have that indie culture, do we, anymore? I think not even from an infrastructure point of view, I think those don't really exist in the way that they did. But also, you know, if you think to early 2000s, if you think to sort of, you know, 2008, 2009, those kind of eras when these big companies were completely off the cards for a lot of guys, and the glory and the joy was in creating wonderful professional wrestling in front of the audience there. I don't know if that ethos is there from the wrestlers themselves either to go out and do that quite often. Hey, it does still exist, but you just kind of have to dig for it a little bit more.
Yeah, it's a lot more sparse than it used to be. I mean, again, you know, you're looking at some other names, you know, like, back then we had names who'd, you know, I would say frequently, because a lot of this was PWG and, you know, they're no longer a thing. But, like, you're not getting the volume of names, or at least volume of names going over doing high-profile stuff in the States. Like, you know, just off the top of my head, Sapphire Reed did a tour of the States last year and was all, I absolutely don't want to say, you know, nothing promotions, but certainly not promotions that people outside of, you know, the hardcore online bubble would even be aware of.
Yeah, and there's no presentation of her as well. So, like, when the British invasion of PWG happened, it was like, oh my God, here's this hot scene, let's put it on a pedestal, yeah, and let's all enjoy it. Then the Australian scene sort of burst out. And then, you know, the just isn't that sort of worldwide kind of ethos anymore, I think, of people kind of searching for this exciting independent wrestling, because it doesn't really exist and there doesn't seem to be as much of an appetite for it. Maybe that's just me being a grumpy old man, though. I don't know. Send me links.
But I think the other thing as well is, like, you know, Progress had, you know, a lot of their guys get US visas. So you had, like, you know, your Tate Mayfairs, your Rios, having, you know, some brief US indie runs. But again, those, you know, pretty much didn't seem to register on any radars. And again, Rios, another name who, you know, you suspect is being signed. We'll see. But yeah, like I say, it feels like it's a self-fulfilling prophecy of kinds. Like, the European scene isn't getting the eyeballs it used to. It's not the darling that it was, you know, 7-8 years ago. But again, I don't really know what you can do to fix it. You know, when this, you know, I spoke about this a few episodes back, where you've got this almost like a mire of every promotion is live or trying to go live to get those day one views of, you know, the as live views. But so is everybody else. And I think it's in this position where European scene is trying to be like everyone else to get the attention. But for a lot of people, you know, and, you know, what we've all spoken of, just how much dilution there is with, you know, WWE and AEW. I mean, I was listening to a podcast with Andrew Bowers of North Wrestling, pretty much saying the same, like, you know, we're meant to be in this big wrestling boom, but it really is a WWE boom. And even is that overblown? But yeah, I mean, I think European wrestling in general, not picking out any promotions yet, but European wrestling in general does seem to be in a spot where they have lost their collective spark. They need to reinvent the wheel, so to speak. Part of this, I don't want to say, oh, all this fans are shit, but you know, we had that spell, you know, coming out of lockdown and everything else, where you had fans screaming, "Oh yeah, it's great! This is back! This is the hot new shit! This is really great!" And I remember at the time, after about five or six runs of, "Oh, this guy's the best! He's the next big thing," and the same people were sitting on their hands. You couldn't find them a search party when a true guy who's actually gone places like Leon Slater was breaking out. I think it's that whole thing of, you've got fan bases who were popping for everything, looking for that big viral tweet to get the Elon pennies to say, "Oh, he's a big star, you want to follow him," this, that, and the other. The boys cried wolf too much, and now at the spot where, simply going, "This person's the hot new thing, you need to check this person out," really doesn't stand out when you've got, feels like 24 hours a week from WWE and AEW every week. But
I think a lot of that is dependent on RevPro in a lot of ways. I think when RevPro kind of take the foot off the gas, which they do periodically, and they go through these down cycles that I think we're in the middle of one now, it really does feel like that affects your view of everything, because it feels like you've got RevPro for the work rate. And you talk about reinventing the wheel. Traditionally, that's what RevPro did. And if you go back to the Voices of Wrestling top 100 matches of the year for the past few years, RevPro would be getting more matches than WWE matches, because they would be going out and putting on these big quality matches. Now, I still think the RevPro matches generally are quite good. There's usually good things on each show, but it's not of that level anymore. And then you've got the other genre of British wrestling, which just seems to be your progress-like shows, which is never going to generate that kind of buzz, because that becomes almost this sort of self-fulfilling prophecy kind of booking, that the people in the room pop for it. It's for those people in the room. Like the progress thing, they might sell a couple of hundred tickets every show, and it's the same couple of hundred people, and they've whittled that audience down to the sort of the absolute bare minimum, and it's not going to burst out anywhere or get anywhere going, and it feels a lot of those kind of shows feel like, to me as a wrestling fan, I'm quite often going up to Pendlebury Social Club to watch Salford City Wrestling, and I could pay 10 quid for a ticket and drive for 5 minutes, and I'll have significantly more fun than I will have going to a progress show in the middle of town and having to pay for parking. So it's a funny scene at the moment, a very funny scene.
Yeah, I've heard a few make the same kind of sentiment. I've not been, my own experience, I've really cut back on my live wrestling this year. Pre-pandemic, I was doing way too many shows, Birth Pros, Regular Progress, went that bloody cave show that gave everyone no demo version of COVID, it turned out. But now it's 16 Karat Gold weekend for WXW, their autumn weekend Pro Wrestling Grand Prix, Birth Pro season ticket for 2 to 9, that's pretty much it. And it's not because there's a lack of shows, but just to me, nothing, at least the social media stuff that I'm seeing, no one's presenting anything that's making me go, "I need to see that." There's a promotion literally 5 minutes down the road for me that, they do a show every other month. I've called the foam finger wrestling, where it's very much, quote unquote casual crowd, the kids, that kind of audience. And problem is, because I don't see them promote on Twitter, they only promote on Instagram. I'll see their shows, but by the time I see the shows come around, the tickets are all gone. So, those kind of shows tend to get crowds, but those tend to be like the mega slams, where, they're in your town once in a, I don't say a blue moon, but they're not running every month, where, you're having to pick and choose months if we can't afford this month, let's go next month, that kind of thing. But we're also not wearing out for welcome. And I think, switch over to RevPro, and their advertising, this next run of show, their biggest summer ever. Heck, they put the tweet out this afternoon. July 6th, 2 to 9 in London. July 13th, HMV Empire, Coventry. Friday, July 25th, Summer Sizzler. That's the show of Mercedes Money in Wolverhampton. Get to that. 2 days later, Network in Sheffield, because why the hell not? Then August 3rd, back to the 2 to 9 in London. August 9th and 10th for Festsaal Kreuzberg in Berlin. August 16th, Buckland Dome in Portsmouth. That's one of their contender shows. The next day, the 1865 in Southampton. God Strike Me Down. And then the following weekend, the 13-year anniversary shows in Crystal Palace. So you're looking at, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 9 shows, say 8, for discount the contender show for the anniversary. And I'm sat here right now, and I'm thinking, they haven't announced any names for the anniversary show. I mean, the tickets have sold because it's their pro anniversary. But it's like, I'm sat here now, like, hey, I've got a season ticket for that 229 show on Sunday. And, you know, peeling behind the curtain, I don't know when this is going to go up, but it's currently 10 past 9 on Wednesday, July the 2nd. We don't know a single match for that 229 show this weekend.
That's crazy to me. I really, like, that's just... You know, the job title is promoter and you're not announcing any matches, and that's not promoting. I think what I was sort of alluding to, I think, before is RevPro could be the promotion for the sickos, as the AEW fans like to say. They could be for the people who just absolutely love professional wrestling. And that's what the shows at the 229 were for as well. You know, that was always the great thing about RevPro, is that Steven and Joe's felt like kind of the family wrestling show. You had your big events at York Hall and bigger events than, you know, at the Copper Box and whatnot. But it really felt like those 229 shows were for the me and you, you know, and it's hard for us to get excited about it if there's literally nothing for us to get. Like, there's nothing for us to get excited about. Like, there's literally nothing for us to get excited about.
I mean, no, we'll touch upon this. Like, you know, the last couple of big shows we had, the Butch Jacob and Stevenage a few weeks back, that was the show where originally you were going to have had, the winner of the Butch Jacob was originally going to get their cruiserweight title shot at the anniversary show. And then, it was a couple of weeks before, we had Leon Cage against Chris Ridgeway in Sheffield. And it was one of those, winner gets a shot at the Revolution Rumble against Will Caven, and the loser goes in Butch Jacob. So, you know, it was meant to be, if you lose, well, you still have a way to get a title shot, but you've just got to go the long way around. Leon Cage picked up an injury. I don't know if it was in that match against Ridgeway or shortly afterwards, and that just upended everything. So they did a switcheroo. RevPro announced the Jacob winner was going to get the shot at the Rumble show a week later. Cage will get his match sometime never when he comes back, and who knows what happens at the anniversary show. I don't even know if they know. But again, as seems to be the way for RevPro, that Butch Jacob show, they didn't have that full field announcement like a day or two before the show. Like, we knew Adam Priest and Ace Austin were the two big imports for the show. But, like, I think it's only Enda Carr was the only other non-regular involved. So you kind of like, okay. And I think by the end, was it Ethan Allen was the last name in the field? It's like, okay, how many... No, has anyone fallen out? Because, you know, someone pointed out when these names are being announced... we haven't had anyone from New Japan this calendar year over here, and you couldn't really go through any one of these marquee shows without New Japan name. Heck, there's been times we had Leo Rush and Minoru Suzuki for 229.
Like, it's interesting just as well that they've booked Tetsuya Naito and Bushi as well. It's like, because, you know, they are very notoriously now not New Japan, so. Mm-hmm. And I believe that's their first booking, isn't it? Is that the first announcement?
That's the first announced booking. I believe they've been doing a bunch of like talk shows and stuff like that.
Yeah, he did an ice cream shop, did he?
So this will be Naito and Bushi's first match. Well, I'm assuming match means if they're just flying over to do a talk show in Wolverhampton, that's going to have some very confused people in the Black Country. But yeah,
well,
I
don't think they would do that. I think if they did that, that'd be very naughty, because I'm not actually going to that show. Me and my wife, every year at the start of summer, we go for like a big slap up meal somewhere, like Michelin, like we really sort of spend holiday money on a meal. And it just so happens that we book that weekend to do it. So I'm a bit like, it's one of those, you know, I absolutely can't get out of it. But if I had that weekend was free, I'd be going, and it would be on the assumption that I would see him, even T-shirt Naito. You know, I'm at this point, I'm not bothered about T-shirt Naito. So surely he must be wrestling. He must be.
I mean, I'd expect main ops. We don't know right now what the deal is. We'll find out in due course. But yes, like, you know, we're looking at that, but, you know, no New Japan names at, in Stevenage, nor at Revolution Rumble, and only CMLL.
You were a bit, I know you were quite down on the J-Cup roster when it was announced. Like, I didn't think it was too bad, but I think you would, like you say, I think there was an expectation that there would be some more exciting names in there.
Yeah, I mean, I like Adam Priest. Again, I've been spoiled. I've seen him like really up close at WXW, like the Academy shows or the Inner Circle shows. It just to me felt like as a lineup, it was just missing that spark. Like,
yeah, and again, and that's the point. I think that's what's endemic of Red Pro, and I think that's what it is that's bothering me with them a bit at the moment. It's like, say, to jump forward a little bit, TK Cooper getting a title shot at the Rumble. TK Cooper's fine. I think he's a good wrestler, and I know he's going to have a good match, and the match was a good match, but I'm never going to get excited about TK Cooper. Like, Ace Austin, again, really like him, but I don't know if I'm going to be like, oh yeah, Ace Austin. It's that sort of, you always that kind of one step down with Rev Pro at the moment.
Yeah, and I'd only use the backhand compliment, always a good hand, but I think with TK, there's that whole thing of he's missed the boat. Now, I don't want to say for any fault of his own. I mean, you know, we've both been fans long enough. You know, we had that horror injury in New York when everyone, you know, with the Progress show, and then, you know, COVID disrupting stuff as it did with everyone. But like, to me, let's go for TK Cooper stuff. So the whole presentation of it, they did the mini tournament to crown a number one contender, because fine, you know, we had no one really lined up. So mini tournament, why the hell not? And the whole thing throughout was TK was cheating to win. I've seen people draw comparisons to David Francisco's, the scare they had when they put the belt on him in Southampton earlier this year, probably with a dusty finish. But the whole thing with TK Cooper has been, I'm not a tag team guy yet. This entire run up until your call, you and me, TK Cooper, Sunshine. It's like the same presentation, like, I get you don't want to roll the clock back and do the old keep at 100 or what have you, but every single time you're doing it, I'm not a tag guy, but you're still coming out for tag music, you're still coming out for your tag trunks.
I think full stop has been egregious, and that was something that I wrote in my notes in preparation for this. Really wound me up about the commentaries are really drilling home this idea of it's not just TK Cooper saying I'm not just a tag guy as like a character for him. You've got the commentary emphasizing this. He wants to prove he's more than just like, what do you mean? Like, what's wrong with being like having you're diminishing your own work in the eyes of the audience? Like, and you know, there's nothing
your own
like,
division,
and you're also beating Luke Jacobs like an absolute drum. And he's just, do you know what I mean? Like, Luke Jacobs has just shuffled, it feels like so far down the card, in our, not in terms of his positioning in the matches, but in our estimations, because he's now just a tag guy. It just feels like there's been this shift in booking ethos and attitude that's become very one-dimensional, very short-sighted. I think a phrase the Americans would use is penny smart, dollar dumb. So you might get this idea of TK Cooper being, you know, this, he could throw away his tag guy, you know, and say I'm breaking free, and I'm, but then you've lost Sunshine Machine, and you've got, I mean, when's Tag League for Rev Pro? Has that been, or is it coming up, or am I getting my
so it's not like a fixed show. So the last few months, Rev Pro's have taken to doing like a lot of post-show videos. So, like with New Japan, you know, they've started doing the, we've got a diary room, we'll, you know, have the guys go in there and, you know, record promos. It works, but we've also had Andy Quilden and Dave Bradshaw do post-show stuff. And we've had this run of Andy dropping snippets of like future announcements. And one of the announcements was teasing, or you were going to see Mercedes Money sooner than you'd think, which ended up being the Summer Sizzle announcement. There's another announcement we'll touch upon, because as we sit now, still no further confirmation, but the other thing was, oh, the Great British Tag League's going to come back, but no dates. I mean, we know we've literally just
touched upon. I had a feeling it was on the radar, but if you imagined, you just look at the roster now and say High in the Sky is next month. Like, who would you have? Especially with this reluctance to bring in guys. Like,
yeah.
Like, I think that'd be my J-Cup moment where I'm expecting to be disappointed by the roster.
So I think for the tag league, I think the thing that's going to save it is it's not a one-show thing. It's spread out across a ton of shows, which I guess may exacerbate things. Like, I remember the original tag league when they brought over the Hours of Hungary. And you know, they kept him the hell away from London for obvious reasons, you suspect. Not their band, just more, it's bloody expensive getting to London, as they want to point out. But like, you look at their home roster now, like, you've got True and Lacey, CPF, although they've had a couple of title shots now. Obviously, Young Guns, you've got to keep the champions in there.
I don't know about the Young Guns these days. I don't know if this is a bit of a controversial opinion, but I don't know. I'm not feeling them. Do you know what I mean? I feel like...
Yeah, I think what doesn't help, and no, I don't want to point fingers at either one of them, but the way they built up Luke Jacobs this time last year, and then relatively quickly did a U-turn and said, right, okay, Luke, you had your win, you had your big moment, back on Michael now.
He had one of
favors.
For 2 years in a row, had one of the best matches in the world that year. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, he had genuine... Like, if you were to say those Luke Jacobs Ishii matches were your favourite matches that year, like, that would be perfectly legitimate. And I think bringing the booking itself has been quite bad. They're booked strong in that they're the champions, but then everyone else can beat them, and And I think that there's a bit of an issue with Ethan Allen at the moment. I think really try to push something that he's not quite got. It would be much better if he was more pushing himself as more technical, if he was pushing himself as a more sort of athletic wrestler. Like, he's good at, because he is a great technical wrestler. Not in the sort of, you know, I'm not thinking like the Zack Sabre Jr. sense, but as in he's got that kind of feel of being very proficient and very, you know, like a sportsman kind of feel to him. But he's trying to copy the Luke Jacobs character a little bit too much, I think. You know, the hard man, I'll knock you out, I'll find you in an alley and you'd be, you know, that kind of thing. And I don't think he can quite pull that off. And he's ramping that bit up to 11, and it's a bit fourth wall breaking for me. So I think he just needs a little bit of refinement, because Luke Jacobs, like you said, has had that refinement on such a large scale, and Ethan Allen hasn't. It's jarring a little bit, maybe.
I think what doesn't help also with Ethan is, and I mean, I like you know, a lot of his in-ring stuff, but storyline-wise, and I've seen a bit of this with Progress lately as well, he's the default, Luke Jacobs got the big singles match, well, Ethan's the fodder, you know, for the guy who's going to face Luke next, and you've had this, you know, most recently Progress with Man Like Dries this past weekend, and I think... We had that run when Ethan was injured where Luke broke out on his own, and I'd almost dare say it at some point, you know, I know this talk with Luke, he's had the tryout, you know, is WWE interested in him? You know, personally, I think a lot of those WWE tryouts earlier this year were more to unsettle the scene rather than to really sign people, but we'll see. But I do think, as far as the Young Guns, I do think we're pretty much at the end of the road as them as a regular team. Like, at this point, you know, Ethan and Luke being a regular tandem is doing neither any good. If anything, especially now because we've seen Luke as the champion in both of the big, you know, British promotions, it's, you know, just a sign of, hey, you're, you know, tag guy by RevPro's own decree, as we've seen, just talked about in their storylines, you know, oh, you're just a tag guy. That's, you know, you're pretty much saying you've demoted him, so to speak. I don't want to go back to, you've been demoted, you're, you know, being pigeonholed, what have you, but their own words, you're just a tag guy.
No, that's literally how they've been presented. It's this idea that, you know, you've had your run. And I think what's interesting is there's almost like a preset story with them, with like the Northwest Strong thing. And I love this idea of factions being kind of like wrestling units that kind of spread out, go worldwide, go to different places and kind of tag when it's convenient. Like Chaos would do, you know, Ishii and Okada, you know, work together, you know, when they came together, but then would separate and do their own thing. And I think we don't have to have this. What it is, and I think this is what it is that's bothering me about RevPro, and it just feels like there's been a bit of a shift in the booking to this very WWE style, you're either a team or you're not. And look at like the end of, I know we're going to get to this later, but look at things like the end of the Rumble. Look at the way, you know, the hardcore match that they had with the Young Guns at the Rumble as well. It just feels like this very saccharine WWE style booking that doesn't accentuate the strengths of someone like a Luke Jacobs and an Ethan Allen personally.
Well, if you want to compare with WWE booking, look for title scenes. You know, and it's been like the start of the year, they did that whole promo thing of the 2-9 where they had every man and their dog. I want to be the undisputed British heavyweight champion. You had, was it Manders? You had Ricky Knight Jr., JJ Gale, Leon Slater. I might be missing one or two. But you had that long line of people, to claim they wanted a shot, and that set up a list of challenges which Oku has tutored been ticking through. I think Ricky Knight Jr. and JJ Gale haven't had theirs yet, but whatever. But apart from that, everywhere else seems to have been, you have your division champion, you have your challenge of the month, everyone else get fucked. And we saw this, literally with the Leon Cage injury. They built up Leon, both him and Nino Bryant had not won a single match in Rev Pro until that match at High Stakes. The fight for Future, where, again, I wouldn't have done it because, or at least had them have a win or two before then, so it didn't come across of, hey, this guy sucks for least, because that was effectively what he was saying. With Nino, oh, you lost, well, it's not your time, you've got a lot more learning to do, and then, because of an injury, sudden gear change, well, quick, you've got to give Nino 3 wins in a month, and now he's champion, which, if you're looking back, with any kind of medium-term view, that is such a jarring shift of fortunes, which, again, speaks to the fact that they had nobody else in position for that spot, or at least the story they wanted to tell. Rumble, but the other thing we kind of touched upon, say the 2-9 this weekend and nothing being announced. Revolution Rumble's their first London big show of the month, of the year, rather. We've had, British Jacob and Stevenage, High Stakes and Doncaster. We've had, was it Coventry as well? There's been an Epic Encounter in Wolverhampton. Sorry, it's kept my Midlands mixed up. But we're getting this very marked effort to pull out of London, it seems. Like, when Rev Pulse moved to new territory, Sheffield was live in Sheffield and was like the B or C shows, if you want to use naming convention or what have you. Southampton's live in Southampton, or live in London, used to be live for Cockpit and then, but just got rebranded live in London. St. Neots, when they ran there before the Priory Centre had a refurb, that got one off show names to keep in with Southside. The Southside convention. Stevenage, same thing. They kept some of the Southside show names before it was, Epic Encounter last year, and obviously British Jacob. So Coventry getting, live in Coventry, and obviously the trio swing last year was a bit different. Doncaster, getting the big shows, which sadly don't seem to have drawn as well as they wanted to. And then, this move to the Hangar in Wolverhampton, High Stakes, and also an Epic Encounter back in March. The Summer Sizzler in about 3 weeks' time, and then Fantastica Mania in October. I'm not sitting here going, oh, what was me? I want to go to every London show. But apart from Rumble this past month and the anniversary show, there is nothing on tap in terms of big London shows. And that definitely is a sign that things are changing. I know they've been wanting to spread their wings, so to speak, but if you've got people in London who you're now telling, oh, you need to travel to Wolverhampton, you need to travel to Coventry, heck, Lyon or Barcelona for some of the other shows they're moving into, money's tight for everyone. I don't think you can get quite the number of people you're expecting to switch from rocking up to your call to sitting down watching on demand. We had this way back when, before they started spreading like this, the Cockpit shows, when they used to do feuds in the Cockpit that paid off at York Hall, and the relative crickets those guys would get because nobody watches the on demand. Apparently the numbers are different, but I don't know, I think longer term it's a bit of a risk moving away from know, having the big shows in one area and maybe a token one elsewhere to now, not being, when we look at the end of the year, unless they have a sudden glut of shows in London, a lot more of those marquee events are going to be outside of the capital than in.
I think it's hard as well if they're relying on being able to book outside talent for these bigger shows. And if that outside talent isn't as available and money is tight, and you are going to have to think really carefully about who you're booking. And, you know, the New Japan thing doesn't seem to be as prominent as it was. There's just a lot of roadblocks in the way. And a lot of things are coming north because it's cheaper up north. But also, you know, we're all poor, aren't we? We're all, you know, at the coalface with, you know, with our flat caps on. And it's just like, we're as skint as everyone else. So it's like, you know, I used to go to so much more wrestling than I do now because everything costs more. So coming up north more and branching outside of London isn't going to be the anathema that isn't going to be, the, you know, the cure that they potentially think it is, I don't think.
Yeah. But and we go to Revolution Rumble. I know RevPro's been claiming there's 1,000 people there. We're going to get Bix on the case because speaking to someone who was there live and people who've been counting the ticket maps that are out, there wasn't even 1,000 tickets out. So I'd love to know where those 250 extra people were. But well, you know, 750. If it was at New Generation Wrestling and Hull did 750, you know, that's 1,000 in London. You know. That's inflation for you. But, you know, quick run through the card. We already covered Nino Bryant's, you know, absolute comeback from being buried 6 feet deep to beating Will Caven for the Cruiserweight title.
Will Caven as well, because back when I did Eurograps Express, I was really harsh on Will Caven, and I thought he was a very, like, pound shop Seth Rollins, I used to call him. And actually, I think he's improved so much. He's so much more natural, relaxed. He's a great heel, and he's a wrestler that I really look forward to watching now. So I think Will Caven has improved immensely.
I do think with Caven, he's been used as a bit of a whipping boy by a section of fans because, you know, the Cruiserweight division had been put on ice pretty much. You know, you had Leo Rush, you know, when he won British Trade Cup last year and people were expecting a title change. That got delayed and then didn't happen. But I do think Will Caven's been used as the, you know, hey, he's the guy, he's the champ, but he's not being booked anywhere else of note. You know, that's not my RevPro, which, you know, I do get some of the criticisms, like, you know, at least some of the mannerisms were very much day one, you know, how to be heel kind of stuff. But it's nowhere near as bad as I think, as I thought he was getting the stick for. But, yeah, and again, now he's lost a belt. I mean, one of the things I was kind of expecting as well, and, you know, the more he was doing the whole, I've been champion for 300 days, you know, in wrestling, that's the big red flag of, oh, he's losing the belt soon. But I was fully expecting him to hold onto the belt past the anniversary show, if only to remove a name we're not going to bring up from being the longest reigning Cruiserweight champion. He's on behind the list, but
I really didn't think like Nino Bryant was going to win either, because I thought the J-Cut was really good for him. But Nino Bryant is a wrestler, and I said this earlier on, who you need to let breathe a little bit, I think. And I know he's been in Repo for a bit now, but he's you can hear when he comes out, and it was the same in Stevenage as well. He comes out to crickets, and then by the end of the match, he's got the crowd on the feet. Because he's, and again, I'm not, it doesn't bother me so much, but wrestling is an aesthetic business. He doesn't particularly look like a wrestler, and that's his strength, and he turns that into a real positive and gets you behind him, but that just takes a bit more time. Like, because that used to be the Oku criticism, didn't it? And now you don't even think that about Oku anymore.
Yep.
Because he's absolutely established himself as being a big, great match guy, and Nino Bryant, I think, isn't quite there, so it'll be interesting to see. He's one of those wrestlers that I don't think he's going to work well as a champion. He's a chaser, not the chased, if that makes sense. But
yeah,
we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Moving on, Kanji beating Emerson Jane. We've been doing a feud since Kanji lost to Mercedes Moné in April. Emerson Jane did the whole, you let us down, I'm going to go for the title shot. Well, we've had two matches, it's 1-1. This one, it was fine, but again, for me, RevPro's women's division, I think it's just been, it's been left gathering dust. Like, you know, this time last year we were all, oh no, we've got the Cutthroat Collective, they're really shaking things up. Now half, no, I mean, Alex Wins is off to AEW, but right now as we sit here, the Cutthroat Collective is literally Lizzie Evo and Sapphire Reed. They're the only ones who get regular bookings. and
that's not a good idea to begin with. That stable is quite cringy, I think, and not very good.
It worked for the story, but it was very clear that they should have been done at the anniversary show if they didn't have any follow-up. And I think a lot, as we've seen in Rev Pro, it's the follow-up that is very lacking. But
well, you hit the nail on the head before, I think, when you said that they don't really know what to do unless there's a belt involved sometimes. And I think this is what's endemic of the women's division, because they're in a bit of a tricky spot that if Mercedes Moné says, I want your belt as part of my belt collector gimmick, you're absolutely going to say yes, because you know you're going to get at least two matches out of her. But then the downside is, for someone like Red Pro, then the belt suddenly disappears and you have no idea what to do. Because God forbid we have more than one women's match on a card, and God forbid they actually start to, you know, plan things that you have a story without the belt. I mean, and the frustrating thing is they can do it, because for how long was the Oku Mills story having nothing to do with belts? And then when they added the belt, it made it so much more interesting. But they don't seem to want to do that with this. I just don't understand why we're having really boring Emerson Jane matches, if I'm honest with you.
I mean, now touch on the money stuff as well. Like, it's very, I would say obvious, but it comes across as if, you know, RevPro find out with very little notice of it. You know, Tony Khan's gone, hey, we don't need a full collision this weekend. Are you able to go get a date and book a show for that date? Which, great. The problem is, if you're finding out, as we did here, you know, Summer Sizzler, they had, a month's turnaround. How can you book a destination if you don't know where you're going?
I think,
or when you've got to be
super
there.
Simple, then. I think just keep it super, super simple, and just have it as, you know, you've got to think of something that's more personal, that's more relevant, that's more real, that these people can be wrestling over, and then that will get Monet's attention when she's ready, and she'll say, I want a title shot. You know, you just keep it as simple as you can, but be creative with it, do something interesting with it, because at the minute, the Emerson Jane Kanji thing just isn't interesting. Like, the Cutthroat Collective, it's just not interesting, it's a bit corny, but...
And right now, obviously, we're doing the Sapphire Reed, I'm conflicted, teasing the whole thing with Zanita Vaughan and the team elsewhere is hyperactive. But that, again, just seems to be going glacially slow. I mean, was it last year they had the whole Millie McKenzie, being courted to join the group? And, again, I don't know if it's because of lack of dates or what, but that story just seemed to go at a snail's pace. And got a reaction when we did the whole, I'll be part of a group, psych, no, I'm not. But again, where's the follow-up?
Yeah.
Next we had Connor Mills beating Manders by referee stoppage. This my kind of wrestling. The only thing was, for me, and I know there's a lot of subtweeting from the RevPro side of things coming in, this was announced for the hell of it, which great, but you've got it's your Rumble show. Can you not at least say, winner goes in number one, loser goes in first, or something like that? Is referee stoppage not a decisive thing? So, they've got plenty of slack to run this back. And I am going to be completely fine if they do that, because I'm a big Mandus guy. Mills, he really has come into his own this last year or two. And this played both men's strengths.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Love Mills. Yeah, he's another one who I remember maybe 5-6 years ago, I was a bit shaky on. I think he had moments, but I think he's one of the strongest wrestlers on the scene. I have a lot of time for Connor Mills, and yes, it's a really good match.
Then we had the No DQ tag title match, which, RevPro has, RevPro always has these where there's a match that goes way too long.
It was talking about an hour and 45 minutes, was it? Something along those lines?
Just a touch under 30, but this is one of the, I'm not a death match guy. I'm not.
This wasn't a death match. This wasn't a death.
No. But hear me out. It's like I'm not a squeamish to I don't like death match because of blood. But the thing that really has me lose any kind of connection or big universe breaking moment, if you will, is if you see when Game Changer does more, insert death match promotion of choice, and you see we're stopping because we have to build our chair and table structure.
Yeah.
Or even worse, when the referee helps them out. It's like, okay, I'm out.
Yeah.
And I think we had just too much of this where they had ideas were good on paper, but then was just so much stopping and stalling as they build shit, they, you know, set things up. And I think, I get they want to have their, I guess their TLC moment, the big match you hung up to say, you know, this is what we, you know, this is what we're capable of. You know, but again, half an hour and it just completely overshot the landing. You know, CPF, and I've heard a few people complain that, you know, they're meant to be baby faces, but they come off as completely unlikable to a certain section. Like, you know, they cashed in the trophies to get this shot, but then end up falling short and blah, blah, blah. CPF are not for me as an act. And, you know, I'm fine. I'm, you know, I turn 42 in a couple of weeks' time. CPF, not my, you know, I'm not their target audience. But it's a whole thing, you know, they've had two runs of the belt. No, if you want to be threatening, they've got two more. They've got two more of those trophies, and they've got only 2 months to figure out what the hell they're doing with those things. Yeah, I think this is one where they had some good ideas. It just was packed with too much filler, and, you know, like with the Rumble, it just a lot of stuff that just didn't really land for me.
Yeah, nobody in the match was particularly good at this style of match. And it just, like you say, it felt very clunky. I think I had issues, and I'm almost kind of hesitant to say this because it's not my body and all that, but I don't think anybody had the decency to do any decent blading. Luke Jacobs did, and it took him about half an hour to do it, and it was a pathetic trickle. They didn't seem committed to it at certain points, and that's fine, because like you said, I'm not particularly a deathmatch guy either. It's not, you know, I see a match like this and it doesn't particularly make me excited in the build up to it. So why not just have a normal match? You know, if you're gonna do it, you gotta do it. You've gotta get somewhere near that Muta scale, and just nobody seemed to particularly have that desire to do that. So it seemed like a silly match to do to me, but.
And again, you know, it's a thing where, you know, Young Guns, okay, see, I've had one win over them, but Young Guns have pretty much beat them in all of the, you know, the tentpole matches, so to speak. So you'd hope this is, you know, them done as a challenger, but got Great Tag League coming up, and God knows we could always circle back there. Second half, Michael Oku beating TK Cooper to retain the title. You know, kind of went over this one already. As a, you know, challenge of the month thing, they, you know, did a pretty good fist for TK, you know, get him into that spot. But unfortunately, you know, they also did the whole, you know, I'm not a tag guy, to the point where that's the thing people keep thinking of. And, you know, Sunshine Machine, you know, they, you know, split up, I guess, in the Rumble. They, you know, think Chuck Mambo slowing down bookings elsewhere, they, you know, effectively laid the groundwork to split them in progress this past weekend. So I don't know if that is really the end of Sunshine Machine, but you know, if you are going to have a really good fist of TK as a credible singles guy, I mean, one, you know, in Rev Pro, you know, if you look Black Agnes Cage match, there is a long history of matches there with the TK where, you know, he was, you know, pretty much, you know, being beaten like a drum at points. Like, I know Oku referred to it in some pre-show video, a bit like pre-match promos. You know, oh, you say I've had all the glory spots, and then was that, you know, that random match with TK and MJF in, was at Northampton before COVID, which, again, if you go that far back, stuff there, which probably I wouldn't have done, but no, I'm not going to dig up old wounds. But yeah, I think that one was TK, you know, I don't think I ever bought him winning the belt, but certainly he had his fans who did. And we'll see what comes from next. And again, it's that you've done the work, and then what, and that has been the part that's been the issue of Rev Pro this year. Revolution Rumble, and no, there's a lot, I think, that you can dissect. For one bit that I think would be remiss not to bring up, if only because there's been, I guess, an ongoing rumbling online about this. What the hell were they doing bringing in Eugene? And I'm not talking about, like, the character. I didn't like the character when he was in WWE because of how WWE portrayed it. And yes, that's 2005 versus 2025. But Eugene at a Rev Pro Your Call show was just so tonally jarring. It's like, you know, back when we used to run was at the Guildhall in Portsmouth, that's where you'd have seen Eugene. Heck, they had Ryback in Portsmouth back in the day. But Eugene at Rev Pro Your Call was just so many bits in a row where it's like, this isn't Rev Pro. I'm not saying this isn't my Rev Pro. That just didn't seem to be a very Rev Pro Your Call thing to do.
I think,
without all the additional baggage.
Yeah, and I think it's worth talking about that additional thing as well, because I'm, you know, we sort of, you know, I'm not saying there was bad intentions here, and I'm not saying that it's something that, like you say, in 2005 we did things that we wouldn't do now. I don't think the Eugene gimmick is appropriate in 2025. If that makes me sound like, you know, painfully woke, then good, I guess, and so be it. But I'm somebody who works with children who have additional needs. It's a big part of my life. It's just something that you leave in the past and you wouldn't do now. And then you've got that idea of like the cultural capital thing of, does he actually fit in York Hall anyway? Probably not. Why was he there? Like, why, what's the, he just sort of came out of nowhere. And I assume they paid money for this guy to do not very much and have not very much afterwards. So
yeah, it's like a 3 minute
lose-lose, isn't it? It's just a lose-lose situation all around.
Yeah. I mean, no, I'm not saying, no, Rev Pro haven't done the as seen on WWE stuff. Like, you've had, you know, Rey Mysterio, you know, called Vader, Kurt Angle, but those three guys up here, yeah, you know, at least, you know, and, you know, Eugene, all due respect, Nick Dinsmore, not in the same stratosphere. And again, that's without the whole extra baggage. Again, I wasn't offended, but unfortunately, that I'm not the guy who would be there to be offended, if you know what I'm getting at. Mm. You know, it's not that kind of character. No, I know what we're getting at. Rev Pro's usage of him wasn't the, to dig up old ground, you know, how they portrayed the Eugene character in WWE with, oh, let's make fun of him because he's got feet, you know, he's got special needs, he's got, you know, how they, you know, tried to tiptoe around it in such a crude way back then. It just, to me, felt like a needless own goal. And now I'm not sitting here saying, oh, Rev Pro need to address it because it's caused hurt, but I would love to know what that thinking was behind even booking this for, granted, a 3 minute spot in the match, but
yeah, no one needs a note snap apology. No one needs any, no. You know, I'm not calling for any of that. It's just, but I think the whole Rumble was very fed pilled. And I just want them to stop doing it now. Like, even down to the noises that they use and the bell, you know, the buzzer, yep. it feels like they're really leaning into something. And the ending as well. I mean, we could talk about Shah Samuels winning in a second. I don't know how you feel about that. But the whole thing of, you know, he thought he'd eliminated everyone and then, oh, you know, surprise, surprise.
It's the trope to all battle royals that I wanted gone before COVID.
Yeah, what are you doing? Like, have a bit, and I'm sorry, I'm going to do a classic Eurograps Express rant with this one, and I apologize for this one. Like, do you not have any pride in your job? Like, this was such a boring Rumble. There was no little nuances to it. You know, people like Cameron Kai, who should have the absolute rocket pack attached to him, are just being dumped out with no ceremony. Luke Jacobs just dumped out to absolutely nothing. You know, there was a little bit with Robbie X coming in and having that kind of surprise return thing, but there was just nothing to talk about. And talk about another fed pill thing, Gideon Gray, and I love Gideon Gray. Gideon Gray is in, and this might sound like hyperbole to some, and I promise you that it isn't. Gideon Gray is in my top 10 all-time wrestling performers. I think he's absolutely brilliant. I think he's a genius. But when his music goes and he gets off the commentary desk, and I've got images of Maggle Cole putting his wrestling ear protectors on, and I'm just thinking, what are we doing with this? Get rid of this Rumble. Get rid of it.
It's the kind of thing Rev Pro never used to do, at least, again, on the big stage, and never used to do it to the contender shows. It's the kind of thing, I think, it's been added on because everyone likes a Rumble. I know it's a progress did with the Proteus belt when we brought that in. It doesn't fit Rev Pro tonally. And
I bet nobody liked this Rumble. Everyone likes a Rumble, and this is the exception that proves the rule. I want to find the person who enjoyed this.
I mean, for me, we've already gone through, you know, some of the, you know, fed pill stuff. The thing that stood out for me was the amount of times we had, oh, guys spilling outside, we're brawling out, but we're not eliminated, we're just outselling on the floor, and oh, we're brawling to the back. It's like,
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Technically, they went under the bottom rope. Okay. It's mm-hmm. still boring. Like, you know, that's not mm-hmm. an interesting, that's not an interesting booking nuance. You know what I mean? You're not Pat Patterson. Let's just, again, it's just all the way through. I forgot to mention before in the J-Cup as well, like having a four-way as the final for that, rather than just have an extra couple of matches. It's just weird, weird booking decisions for me at the moment.
Yeah, and again, I suppose with a Rumble, it being, you know, not by default for title shot, although everyone's picks for title shots so far, it meant you weren't going, who's going to be realistic to challenge Oku? But, I mean, you know, going back for winner Shaw Samuels, I mean, if you want to be, you know, ridiculously short-handed on this, it does feel a bit like, you know, RevPro doing their Tanahashi thing, but with someone who hasn't got bad knees. No, it, no, they have played, you know, a few times now, Shah having a swan song, you know, whether that's retirement or, you know, if that NXT Europe thing's knocking, who knows. But yeah, I mean, for me, I didn't feel so down on Shah winning. I mean, like, you know, I like Shah Samuels, but for me, it also felt like that's playing to a part of the fan base that maybe isn't there anymore.
Yeah.
Like, I know live people are very, you know, very, huh. Why is he won? Because they don't watch all the shows. They don't follow the promos where Shah's still talking about, you know, have I been surpassed by the new generation? You know, it's the easiest story in the book. Although, you know, this is Shah against Oku. It's a spectrum B for the anniversary show. That in itself doesn't feel like a main event, or at least, you know, anniversary main event. So is there a big name coming in? You know, again, we're, what, 2 months out and we don't know a single name for the anniversary show, which is a wider concern. But, yeah, I think in terms of Rumble itself, you know, you've touched on a lot of the WWE-ified part of it, which, you know, I know WWE's got their Rumble next month. You're not going to get as many, if any, of the Brawl to the Outside or, you know, I mean, fuck, you're not going to get Matt Damasi throw off a headset and, you know, come down from the balcony to join the match. So in that regard, you're not going to get that kind of stuff. And, you know, I like Matt just much like Gideon. You know, both of them have got a lot of time in the world for. But it's just that whole thing of, you know, it's not the guys, it's the tropes, which unfortunately have been creeping more and more in. And again, so yeah, Shah, what were your takes on Shah winning?
It's a funny one with Shah because I understand what you're saying, and I think in a way it's nice if you're going to do the anniversary show to have a very classic Rev Pro match, and Shah against Oku just feels very Rev Pro. It feels like, you know, two very deep Rev Pro guys, but I just can't get excited about it. And it's almost a little bit kayfabe breaking with the, you know, if the story is Shah saying, have I been surpassed by the younger generation? Well, it's not really a rhetorical question because yes, you know, and I know that's awful to say because I do really like Shah Samuels. He's, you know, I think you absolutely have him around, you have him doing things, but he shouldn't be at the top of the card. He should be, I think, your gatekeeper. I think he should be the guy putting people over, not at the top of the card and winning the Rumble. But that's me.
Just a quick cage match. Oku and Shah had one prior match, 2023 in Southampton. They've also been in all three Revolution Rumbles so far. Obviously, and I don't think there's been too much wave interaction, but yeah, just thought it was weird how one on one has only been one singles match, and the rest have been, the majority of them have been Blumen Rumbles for WXW and Rev Pro. But
I mean, that is positive, yeah, though, I think, because it feels like a Rev Pro match.
It's not overdone.
It still feels fresh. The problem is it doesn't feel exciting. It doesn't feel like something that I can really go, oh yeah, it's not gonna have you getting that credit card out to book a ticket, I don't think.
Especially with Crystal Palace. But anyway, we've got a few more grumbles here. So we touched upon the women's division stuff. So post-Revolution Rumble, Andy Quillen did the recap video and mentioned we're going to have a four-woman tournament to get the Mercedes Money match. Now, I've been tracking stuff like win-loss records because I'm a fucking nerd. But you look at especially the women's division, the only woman they regularly use who has a winning record is Kanji. She's already had the shot. Yeah, I know Danny Luna won that high-stakes match, but you know that very quickly got retconned as not being for a title shot, in which case was that half an hour of wrestling for the sake of wrestling? Guess so. So now we're doing a four-woman tournament for the match against Mercedes, which, or what are they? Because it's not 5 to 10 p.m. Wednesday night. Not a single match still has been announced. And right now, there's a lot of people who are effectively playing a game of guess who when it comes to who's actually being booked and who isn't. I've got one name for the 229 this weekend. And in the style of guess who, is he in a different gear?
In a different gear?
Ethan Allen, he's announced he's booked for F12 this weekend. No match, but with the point now where, four days out, we're waiting for wrestlers to tweet that they're appearing on a show.
Oh, so it's just something that he's tweeted off his own personal account and he's not actually been announced. Right.
Yeah, literally, back at RevPro UK this weekend, who wants it?
They've not put anything on Blue Sky, and I don't know. I'm very much not. I've deleted all my Twitter, and I don't keep up with this stuff as much anymore, but they've not updated their Blue Sky for 5 months.
I'm just as guilty of apps, but yeah, at the same point, if you're going to move to a social media platform, you need to either invest in something where it will auto-post this stuff or commit to it. I mean, like right now, like RevPro's Twitter, this is, had a flurry today. The tweet with the summer dates, retweeting their graphic designer, replying to a BBC News article about redesigning England's banknotes with his Mercedes Money, Bank of Money note that he made for the high stakes show. An announcement for summer sister tickets on general sale now with Los Tranquilos de Japón and Mercedes Money. Yeah, well, I'd hope for on sale with shows in 3 weeks' time. Retweeting David Francisco clip from the Rumble. Then we're going back for weekend general sale for RevPro Live in Lyon. And then, yeah, we're going back to post-Rumble stuff. So, yeah, considering they have their busiest summer ever, pretty quiet Twitter account. But, yeah. So right now, all we've known is through a throwaway Andy Quilden line, there's going to be a four-woman tournament. People, like say, playing guess who for who's actually going to be booked, like looking at who's booked where. Obviously, it's London this Sunday, Coventry next week, and then Coventry, I'd suspect, be the final as well, and then the winner on July 25th in Wolverhampton. So people looking to see who's got other bookings on the 25th, who's got other bookings for these next two Sundays. Sort it out, man. I mean, like, you want people, like we said at the top, you're promoting, you want people to buy tickets to a show. People are not buying blind. I know we're not, very much not going to be post-speaking out days where people are, demanding roster lists and cards for even plunk money down for a ticket. But when you're getting more and more shows where, cards aren't even beginning to be announced on show week, you've got problems.
I mean, it's as simple for me as my mortgage cost twice as much as it did 5 years ago. So I can't go to every RevPro show blind, and I don't want to spend money going to a show that I don't know who's there because I don't know if I'm getting value for money. It's baffling to me that they're not announcing who's going to be there. Unless they don't know who's going to be there, which is even more worrying, really. Surely they must do, though.
Oh, God, yeah. You'd hope so. I mean, the other thing I'd say as well, and goes back to the stream live or you miss it out thing, RevPro On Demand is, I feel like I'm getting grey here. How much is RevPro On Demand these days?
£8, I think, is it?
Let's have a look. Revolution Rumble, subscribe. £7.40 a month for £70 a year. So for the cost of two front row tickets for 229, you can have a year's RevPro On Demand, which for people right now, if you're watching your wallet, and especially if all of the majority of your shows are going to be streaming live, you're going to be picking streaming. But
it's a tricky situation they're in with that, though, because the kind of the market has set the price. I'm sorry, I know I sound like a right capitalist there. I apologize. But it's like kind of how much it costs. I mean, have you seen how much CMLL's thing is? They want £30 a month. And I won't pay that. I could afford it, I think, but I won't pay it because it just seems egregious.
When WWE Network started, about 10 years ago, people said this was going to cannibalize a lot of independent promotions' business methods. Like, 10 years ago, the business method wasn't a streaming service. The method 10 years ago was, the old Ring of Honor method. know, you go to the show live. If you can't go to the show live, you wait for us to make it, master and put it on DVD. You know, be a lot of people who, you know, would have, and I was one of them, you know, had, you know, massive packets of DVDs, you know, shipped across from overseas.
I was just going to say, how many times have you paid more than £20 for a DVD and thought nothing of it? Yeah, if I was to ask you to pay £20 a month now, you'd think like, oh, I don't know if that's good value. It's just such a, the whole, I really feel for these independent promotions and the world that they're in.
It's an unfortunate race for Bobman. Like, you know, we touched upon the Cultaholic interview with North's Andrew Bowers. No, that's touched upon. Like, they tried going live earlier this year, and they did things one, maybe two shows, and they've backed out because it just didn't make financial sense. And it, you know, tying the bow, it's a whole thing of, you know, if you can't get people through the doors, you've got to find a way to make people want to spend money on your product. If that's streaming, you know, if you think, and, like, I know nothing about video editing, but I do know that other promotions largely are able to put out a complete product on VOD, by which I mean, you know, they'll patch the house mic through. If they have video packages, they're put through the live mix rather than showing a camera filming the video screen. You know, they have on-screen graphics, where, you know, they do all that stuff, and it's not, it's DIY, but it's not also, you know, not painfully polished like WWE and AEW. So other independent promotions can do that. With Rev Pro, if you're watching live, there's no lower thirds. You know, if there's any video, you're relying on, you know, someone pointing the camera at the screen for the most part, which it has its charm. But at the end of the day, if you're, you know, limited and you're going for, you know, rough and ready live Rev Pro stream, because I'm going to be able to save a polished final edit versus, I don't know, WXW Now, where, you know, their stuff is, you know, not very high quality, or IWTV where they have a lot more promotion, or even Triller where they have it maybe not as much as they used to. You know, you can only spend your money once. Yeah, going back to like RevPro, their old Europe, their USP always was, and I think still is on the mat, you know, pro wrestling at its best. That kind of dipped a little, like, you know, we said earlier on, the Match of the Year polls always used to have a lot of RevPro, and this year, I mean, you know, on the Back Body Drop website, you know, keep a list of, I'm not watching and rating as much as I used to, but I keep a list of matches I've gone north of 4 stars on. We're in July now. I've not added anything to this since WrestleMania weekend, and the last Rev Pro match I went over 4 on was March.
Yeah, I mean, we've still got the summer, which is apparently the biggest summer of Rev Pro's history, isn't it? What are they pushing as? The ultimate summer?
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll see.
Well, I don't want to read too much into that because the word ultimate does imply one thing. But yeah, one last thing on Rev Pro, because, you know, we've already gone about, you know, them going gung-ho on other towns. That lack of New Japan, seeming lack of New Japan connection to me, it is very easy to peel away the skin of that and say, well, you know, the last couple of excursions they had haven't exactly been glowing. And I don't want to be, you know, Batista with, you know, after he went to OVW and he had nothing good to say about it. But when Shota Umino was over, and granted it was during the pandemic, so everything was up in the air, there was always New Japan Diaries, which were hardly, showering Rev Pro of praise, shall we say, at least to know of his living situation. Youngblood, you know, their run over here last year, I would say, was very disappointing. Like, you know, I've heard rumblings, you know, from people who've, you know, who've met them at the merch table, of, you know, general discontent with the way they were used in Rev Pro, over stuff that I probably can't be repeating. But, you know, the fact that their Rev Pro run started was in February last year, and by the anniversary show, they were done. You know, like, now their excursion wrapped up in Europe in March, April time. You know, they finished with WXW, they finished with Pro Wrestling Holland. They're not on New Japan cards as we speak. They're back in New Zealand doing bloody Fale Dojo, New Japan Tamashii stuff. And it's like, that to me could be more damaging than you'd think. Like, I know New Japan's really changed how they do excursions, but if you think New Japan, you know, had this run where you had guys going to Ring of Honor when it was a standalone thing. No, I know Evil's excursion was not exactly great, but you think, you know, we had Shota, we had Yota Tsuji, we had Youngblood, and, you know, for the most part, unfortunately, things don't seem to have gone well. that's coincided with New Japan not having any representation on RevPro shows this calendar year. I'm not saying that, you know, one's caused the other, but you do have to wonder. And this is me saying, oh, I want New Japan, give me House of Torture, get fucked.
Yeah.
But it's just nothing when you look and see, like, this has happened and this has also happened. Is there a link? And unfortunately, because things aren't going as well as they would have been, people start digging into stuff like this. People start looking at, you know, hey, is this why New Japan's not take part? I mean, we'll see. But yeah, RevPro, you know, they've got a lot of shows coming up. Unfortunately, you know, not much in the way of matches announced. Hopefully, you know, Andy's furiously working away in Photoshop and he's got a huge litany of match graphics to post before this episode drops. It's sort of slow. Every time I do a podcast, there's a big news story drops the day after. We'll see.
Even if he announces them tomorrow, the point still stands because they should have been up weeks and weeks and weeks ago.
Because you, I mean, you've got people like even folks who live in London. No, you live in London, even like Zone One or what have you. You still have to, you know, make plans, get up, make a point of getting to 229. Especially, I know these days front row is at least for season tickets is assigned seating. But if you want a decent seat or what have you, you've got to, you know, queue. So you've got to, you know, make a point of getting there early, or you just want to get there and stand by the bar, you know, whatever you want. But you know, people, you know, and we've seen this with other wrestling shows and other entertainments. If you book something now, like Forbidden Door, you know, I jumped on the pre-sale because I'm an idiot. I paid way too much for my ticket and we're up in the gods. But I booked my ticket, I booked my hotel. I'm going, unless, you know, the world falls apart, or, you know, there's a TFL strike, hell no, or, you know, if I'm ill, what have you. If I'd waited to, like, you know, week of and there's tickets left, oh, well, I'm washing my hair. If you know me, you know why that's funny. Oh, you know, anything else could get in the way. And this problem is, like, yes, you can rely on walk business, but that's also probably the least number of people you're going to get, like, especially if you don't do any local promotion. That's going to be the smallest pot of people you're going to get, because the closer you get to something, the fewer people have plans that they're either willing to drop or willing to, you know, suddenly make plans and go, okay, I was going to have Sunday lazing at home before I go back to work tomorrow. No, sorry, I'll go for wrestling. And your core fans have already got the tickets. It's that floating voter who, you know, decides on a show-by-show basis. They're the ones that you kind of need to appeal more to. But we'll see. We've got a lot of practice to get in with these. A couple of other shows coming up, and I guess quick wipe-up results. This coming Friday, Eve, have got their monthly show, Mean Girls, at the Big Penny Social in Walthamstow. We've got Chris Statlander over taking on Anita Vaughn for the international title there. That should be interesting. Also, we've got a fight to finish match with Nina Samuels against Sapphire Reed. A long bit of story here. Nina beat Sapphire for the Eve belt back in the day. Eve since lost her belt. So now I guess this is almost like a big blow off. It's worth noting, mind, that Nina has been shedding titles in recent months. Not all the belts were on Cage Match, but she lost the Eve international belt in March, then the Eve title in May. The Progress women's belt 2 days later, the W3L title in Scotland on May 16th. It's also got a Loser Leaves Town match in Progress against Kanji this month. So, if you have a load of belts, you start dropping them and suddenly start taking on Loser Leaves Town matches. Something may be going on is all I can say on that front. WXW's Driver Champions was a couple of weeks back. This particular show is live on WXW now, but I believe the VOD is on Triller later this week. Headlined Manders against Aaliyah Bloom in a Texas Death Match. Suitably bloody. Aaliyah was bleeding like a good in about 5 minutes into this match. So if you're into blood and Texas Death Matches, head on by one of all. I do recognize Texas Death Matches aren't that big of a stipulation. And there was some element of a live crowd having to be educated, and also of a live crowd sweating their bollocks off, because speaking to someone who really was in the Turbine Hall that night, it was super humid. They were getting a warm-up of the heat wave they were getting at the moment. Elsewhere, Robert Dreisker, Mark Empire, new to WXW Tag Champions. It's Dreisker's sixth tag title reign with six different partners, which is a neat little stat. We've got a Who against Manders at Shock at the Top in August, and Cosby Shock at the Top Rumble itself. and a Who against Aaliyah Bloom on July 19th in Frankfurt in a dog collar submission match, which feels a bit like laid gimmick heavy, but yeah, both those on Triller in English as well. So if you want to catch up on that, that'll be on July 19th. Pokus has passed for a weekend in Manchester. We had Man Like Dries beating Ethan Allen as replacement for Chris Ridgeway. Main event, and you know, you'll be surprised by this, Luke Jacobs retaining the Progress Men's World title over Cao Nguyen, what I would say was probably one of the best matches in the UK this year.
I don't believe
and
it.
And I'm not... No, they dialed down the amateur dramatic stuff of Cao Nguyen. There was a little bit of, like, towards the end, like, one count kick out NXT shocked face, but this is a genuinely good match.
I am going to seek this one out, actually, and I did say, like, Cao Nguyen is... I don't know if I've ever articulated my thoughts on Cao Nguyen, but he's the absolute antithesis of what I want from my wrestling. I really, if you ever been on his website and you look at this sort of very kind of patronizing.
I've seen back in the day, yeah, it's very much like a, almost like an actor's portfolio kind of thing.
Yeah, just an awful.
He's my range.
Of, yeah, just a very, I find it very sneery, very patronizing, very, and he wrestles in a way that I just don't want to watch. And this show, I could get to the O2 Ritz in town in about 20 minutes, and I still shut the curtains, just in case. but now you've said that, I'm seriously considering that I might have to watch this main event. Because I'll always eat humble pie. I'm always willing to be proved wrong, so I'll have a go.
And in terms of match time as well, it was only about 20 minutes, so it didn't go overly long either. So, well worth a shot. Elsewhere on the Progress show, Shotzi Blackheart debuted with her arm in a cast, selling the Matt Cardona arm injury stuff, losing to Nina Samuels. Sunshine Machine lost Progress tag titles to the first defense, losing to Lycos Jim. This one, if you watch live streams, complete clusterfuck. Kid Lycos loaded his knee pad for the Psycho knee. Commentary was screaming about it, but the camera crew didn't show it. Nice they've had the Rev Pro crew on loan that day. But yeah, that probably big stuff from Progress this past weekend. Other stuff from around Europe in the last few weeks, and most of these will be streaming somewhere. Not going to cover all these, but ICW wrapped up their tenure for Asylum in Glasgow. They had a two-night show called Paul Wanoot. Charles Samuels retained the Zero G title for Zach Morris, against Jack Morris in night one. Kenny Williams retained the ICW title against Aaron Echo in night two. The first show back at the garage, or regularly back at the garage, is Kenny Williams against Rio. ICW title defense fan, I believe that is towards the back end of July, I believe. So that will be on Triller. Over in Holland, Rico Bushido's live action wrestling was in Groningen about a month ago with Jørn Simmons winning the main event. Jørn's become a bit regular in live action wrestling since he lost the Pro Wrestling Holland tag title back in April. I'm just waiting to get back to WXW and get his own back on Levaniel. If you know, you know, from 2 years ago. Berlin's GWF have had a ton of shows, both live and dropping on YouTube. Started this month, Rising Heat saw Axel Tischer beat Meta Han and Erkan Sultani to win the GWF title. That's up on the GWF YouTube. Pretty much all their Berlin shows are streaming live. We've got this coming Sunday, we've got Summer Heat with Kid Lycos challenging Rambo for the GWF title. Axel Tischer against Erkan Sultani, and Jack Morris against Pascal Schwalter. And if you're waiting, a couple of the GWF house shows from May up there. I think it was either Rostock and Hamburg went up. So we had two house shows there, which I thought was just going to be for the live crowd, but made tape. Sticking in Germany, Unlimited Wrestling had a show, Firewall 2025 in Berlin. Itach Mahal won the Unlimited Challenge title. We had German wrestling promotion in Roth, nothing of note there. You should have a couple of bits of my cards, but nothing this time. I'm going to butcher this, W. Kirchhain in near Dresden, we had Rising Star Warriors, seems to be a new promotion, with Drew Gulak random flying there, losing a street fight for the vacant RSW title to Erkan Sultani. If you look around on Cage Match, like the European promotions, a bunch of random names just popping up in these German promotions, and I'm not saying I want to see Drew Gulak in the UK, but very weird, like some of the promotions that these guys pop up for.
Is it like a seminar situation, like they bring him in to do some training and stick around
probably
for a booking, maybe something like that?
More than likely, yeah. I mean, I know that Rings of Europe, you know, they really dial down the show. They tend to do that. They'll bring people in for one or two shows and maybe get people in trouble. Wrap up with a couple of shows from Nanterre in France this past weekend at the Studio Jenny. Fourth Rope ran Pray for Paris with a stacked card. Shelton Benjamin was meant to be on this. He pulled out late on. Instead, we've got Mike Locke, who replaced him against Kuro. That was the title for title, APC against Rev Pro, but heavyweight title. And would you believe it, Neil? It ended in a no contest.
Shocker.
Funny how that works. elsewhere, we had EJ Nduka, the judge. He beat A-Buck. And Mara Sade, the former Jakara Jackson, made her first post-WWE appearance. She teamed with Tiara James to beat GJU and Rio. So I don't think that's out on stream anyway, but I imagine it'll make tape somewhere eventually. The next day, APC took over their usual spot in the Studio Jenny for Final Storm. This was up on YouTube Live with Matt Damasi doing English commentary. I'll have this one linked in the show notes. Rio retained the Progress Women's belt against GJU and Celine in the opener. And main event had Nick Nemeth beating the soon-to-be-disappearing Aigle Blanc. Again, another one. Nick Nemeth over and only doing a promotion in France. Like, I don't know if it's finance or what, but again, we're getting a lot of random promotions booking American names and them not doing stuff in the UK, which it's always a bit of a nod. Like, back in the day, you'd get, like, they'd do, you know, maybe Progress and RevPro, then, you know, bugger off to Europe the next day. But definitely doesn't seem to be happening these days.
Wonder if he's just on his holidays and they've said, you know, he's been local to a promotion and he's got him some beer tokens, maybe, something like that.
Could be. I mean, generally, I can know not to use Nick Nemeth as an example, but his European run after WWE hasn't really materialised. And I guess one random thing to throw up, you know, I spoke earlier about promotion up the road for me. Found out in Discord they've got a training skill, knew that much. Have a guess which former WWE guy they had do a training school, a training seminar at, well, due respect to New Force, a small promotion just outside of Uxbridge in West London.
I'm trying to think of a silly one, but I don't want to say the wrong name, so I'm just going to let you tell me, I think.
They had Rhino do a training seminar for, I think it's about 12 people. Like, again, Rhino's name, I know he had, you know, RevPro booked him. But heck, remember they had him give the gourd to Dan Maloney before he went all Bullet Club?
Ew.
And then, no, Dan Maloney isn't, has made himself not want to work with RevPro anymore, which, you know, again, some to scratch at, I guess. But, yeah, I thought that was weird how, you know, you get a load of, as seen in WWE names who just aren't doing the big promotions. And again, you know, next episode's going to be out after this. Didn't put this in the notes, but North Wrestling, they're doing their annual big show at the Walker Dome in Jesmond and Newcastle. I hope it's Jesmond. No, it's Walker, because it's Walker Dome. I'm from up there and I get my local knowledge wrong. But yeah, that was the show was meant to have been headlined by Tajiri. He's pulled out because of an issue with the promotion booking his transport. So we've now got Raj Desi, the former Jinder Mahal, against Amir Jordan, I guess, in the main event there, which I know there's been a few people pointing off, but, you know, North said, you know, they've gotten a lot of people buy tickets and sort out meet and greets based on that, so who am I to judge? We've also got Paul London on that same show, Leon Slater, Rio, Rampage Brown, so it's the third show they've got at the Walker Dome. Sorry, the main event isn't Raj Desi and Demi Jordan. It's actually Leon Slater defending the North title against Liam Slater and Gene Money. So, yeah, a bit for everyone there. And, you know, it's not going to be streaming live. It will be on their Patreon on demand as well. But, you know, definitely North, you know, come on a long way from those first shows on the riverside, on the banks of the Tyne all those years ago.
Yeah, North are a promotion that I haven't caught up with for a while. Well, this might be a good time to jump on. But when you said Gene Money then, my interest kind of waned slightly.
It's very easy to do, but I think in Progress, you know, the way he's been presented there from day one's always been as a comedy act. But I've always been a fan of Gene in smaller rooms, which, not as knock on North, but you know, North very much isn't seeing the same level as progress. But no, this is a, you know, this is a thing they have been, you know, doing through stories. You know, they have had interactions. So Liam and Leon, you know, coach and, you know, trainer situation. And I believe that was previously a Thunderstruck match in years gone by. Let me check that quick. But I think Thunderstruck won in 2023. Was Leon against Liam. So that was the first one, was Leon beating Liam for the title. So there's rivalry there, and there's also rivalry with Leon and Gene Money from end of last year. So this isn't a, oh, hey, let's just throw the big names we've got together. But, yeah, it's one, I think, for people who've been paying close attention to North, you know, they're very much on board with. No, I'm not going to be able to get up there to see this live, but I'm very much going to, you know, make a point of checking this out on their Patreon. No, North are doing good things, and I'm saying that through gritted teeth, you know, as a Sunderland supporter about something from Newcastle. But yeah, you know, making it this far, you know, three big shows, you know, definitely not to be sniffed at, especially in this climate. But keep an eye on that. That is North. If you just search for northwrestling.co.uk, you'll find the socials and Patreon there. But Neil, no, you said you've no longer on Twitter, but if people want to find you on Blue Sky, how do they do that?
If I'm completely honest, I've got absolutely no idea. I've spent the last 6 months just completely... It's weird, like, I've just completely detoxed myself of social media, and I don't miss it, I don't think about it. I do have a profile, and it is just, it's Neil-David, but there's absolutely nothing on there. Like, you know, so, I don't know, I guess. Voices of Wrestling Discord, I lurk in there from time to time.
As do I most times. But yeah, thanks so much for joining us, mate. We'll have you on at some point, maybe, you know, to maybe detox the anniversary shows once you've been through whatever the heck's going to be coming through. And just one final time check. It is 20 past 10. I sound like Alan Partridge, but 20 past 10 Wednesday night. Still nothing announced for RevPro for 229 this weekend. And I suspect, you know, by the time this is uploaded, we'll have a full card, more for me. But yeah, thanks again for joining me, Neil. If you want to follow me on social media, just search for Ian Wrestling, you'll find everything there. But yeah, thanks again for listening, folks, and we'll see you on the next round of Euro Clutch. Thanks very much.
Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is, how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.
Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings, and I want to tell you all about my show, the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. On the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, we do a thorough analysis on the biggest issues and trends within the pro wrestling industry. We talk a lot about pro wrestling media, we talk a lot about fan culture, and wrestling's place within general pop culture, and we talk about the broader influences that are shaping the way we discuss and analyze the pro wrestling industry. We've had some of the brightest minds in the pro wrestling intelligentsia on the show, including WrestleNomics host Brandon Thurston, both Rich Kreich and Joe Lanza from the Flagship Wrestling Podcast, Trevor Dame from the Through the Years podcast, and a whole lot more. This isn't a show for hot takes. It's not a show recapping the latest episode of television. This is a show focusing on the biggest topics in pro wrestling and doing a deep dive on the real stories behind the surface level analysis you might find elsewhere. The Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, and we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a try. Thanks.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, Spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.